Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire. This is your number one MLS soccer podcast on MLSsoccer.com, YouTube, wherever you find your podcasts. I am without some partners in soccer. I am David Goss. I am with Charlie Davies. This is the dream duo right here. Can you just play nine behind the ball and these two up top to create chances as Andrew Wiebe sleeps off another illness? And so, of course, all of our energy goes out to him. And I think Matt Doyle's asleep somewhere in on an alley, recovering from CCL as he intook it all over the course of the night. I've never seen someone say, I'm done with this so many times, but then 2 minutes later, still be texting about the same game. We will get to all of that CCL madness that we had over the course of this week. One thing you can guarantee, this competition always delivers on that. And we're excited to talk about it. We've got some huge national TV games coming up this week, including Nashville versus Inter Miami coming up on Sunday. We're going to have Randall Leal on to talk about that. Talk a little Costa Rican national team. Los Ticos still one of the dominant forces in the region and everything that Nashville's looking to do in year two. And then we'll talk another American in the Bundesliga, this time on the sideline. Jesse Marsh taking over as head coach of RB Leipzig, to join up, rejoin with Tyler Adams. The hope is every other Red Bull 2 player will come back over now, and they can recreate the greatest team in American history just in the Bundesliga, and they'll probably win a title. You're welcome, RB Leipzig. Fear us, Bayern Munich. Fear us very well. Don't forget, Club and Country came out this week. Charlie gave his breakdown of the number 9 depth chart. It's the one position we didn't hit on the first show, and no one knows it better than Chuck D, so I think that was a pretty good debate. It was interesting to see who you had number one. Give you a hint. We're going to talk about him later on this show and where he could be playing over the next month or so. We talked to Richie Larea, who's a legend up in Canada, about what Canada can be and what they could do in World Cup qualifying coming forward, as well as a little bit TFC chat, because they're stuck in the middle of it right now and they've been pretty good to start the year. Maybe not so much on set pieces. Don't forget to go to MLSsoccer.com. Matt Doyle's midweek column, breaking down a ton of tactics, talking Adam Saldana, a youth legend, and Greg Vanney's LA Galaxy, and then Charlie Bohm's take on the David Ochoa situation, I guess you could say, experience in Minnesota versus RSL, which I know you have takes on, Charlie, and we're going to hit that later on in the show. And let's start with the producer, Anders, reminder of the day, the free space is disappointment. Until it is not. It was a Wednesday night to remember, I guess, to forget. Hard to say for MLS. It was up and down. It started terribly, very quickly for Columbus. Early goal against Monterrey. You're thinking, why do I do this to myself? Jonathan Mensah's not in, who we both voted, I think, as defensive player of the year last year. And we're dying over here. No offense, Abubakar Keita. But he's fallen over, giving up chances. Then Columbus pours it on. Lucas Zelrayon, God mode, does it again, getting a second tattoo of a CCL trophy, ready for it. And then in the 94th minute, they concede, and Zelrayon picks up a yellow card to be suspended for leg two. Charlie, this one had mountains, valleys, everything.
It did. And when you see them score the go-ahead goal to go up 2-1, and you feel that really confident that the second leg – that they have a real shot at getting it done. You leave a player wide open, knowing that they're throwing the kitchen sink at the Columbus Crew. Every player is making a beeline for the box. Just mark. That's it. Yeah. And anything close within the six, you have confidence that the keeper's going to come out and get it. I was deeply disappointed with that. But at the same time, it's still a good result, because you got a point. You didn't lose at home, and you can go and take care of business on the road.
It's interesting, because we've talked about Columbus's depth, and I said that they were favorites to win this for an MLS team, even with the path they had, which was so tough because of the Liga MX teams they'll probably have to beat. I think Jonathan Mensah's the one they couldn't replace. Right? Even Eloy Room, Evan Bush, solid player in goal. Lucas Zelrayon, they'll now be missing for leg two. It sucks, and you don't have Kevin Molino. But I think you could believe that between Pedro Santos and Luis Diaz, and maybe they go two up front and play Wright Phillips with Giassi, whatever it is, that they'll create chances. Mm-hmm. But Mensah was the one that Josh Williams has been solid alongside him because he's great. He could not carry Cada. Cada wasn't ready for this game when it started. And at this level, you can't slip in the box and give these guys an opening. And you just didn't have an opportunity. And credit to Columbus. They recovered. They played the soccer I thought they'd play. They were the better team. They created chances. They looked like they could have scored. They should. I mean, they put the ball in the net more than twice. They looked like they should have put it in even more. This was the game I thought Monterrey or that Columbus could play. Now they got to, they pretty much have to go and win in Mexico at 2-2 with two away goals.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. As far as a partnership, striker partnership, Zardes and Bradley Wright Phillips.
Yeah.
And they complement each other very well. I mean, because Zardes likes to just get into the spaces, makes those long runs, diagonal runs, causes a lot of confusion amongst the back line. And then you have Bradley Wright Phillips, who's one of the greatest box strikers in our league's history. So I feel like if you're going to play two strikers, probably the ideal pair to have.
And we've seen Brad over the last 4 or 5 years likes to drop deep and create now. Like, he's happy to set up a guy like Zardes if he can get opportunities and finish. It's a lot for Caleb Porter to figure out. They got another game this weekend to try and get through. Is it fair for me to be happy with the performances from MLS in general across this week before we dig into Portland, America? Is it fair for me in a week in which, okay, Philly plays Atlanta, which is one of the other three MLS teams, none of them won. Two of them outpossessed the Mexican side. All of them looked on even level, or are we past that and I've got to stop taking moral victories?
Well, I would say it's definitely not disappointing. Okay. And we are past the, oh, we could play with them. You know, we have, I think, developed as a league where we should be able to, with the amount of money we spend and the scouting, and I think just the way teams are set up, we should be able to compete with the top Mexican teams and finally win a CONCACAF Champions League. But I think what we saw from Columbus was fantastic at times. Of course, set pieces have been kind of a problem for TFC, for Columbus. Portland, I think... Injuries, also, you know, it's just bad timing. TFC, they don't have Pozuelo.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of the league's best. They didn't have Akinola healthy. They didn't, Josie is just getting on the field. So
Osorio's really, played 12 minutes this year.
Right. So you don't have a fully fit with all your star players team, you know, playing against the best Mexican team right now, Cruz Azul. Yeah. So that, I guess that was expected, to be honest. And then Columbus Monterrey, yes, the Cruz should have won at home. And they'll all tell you they outplayed Monterrey. They should have won. They didn't, but they're still in it. And then same thing with Portland. They had at times, I think they were missing that killer instinct up top. They didn't have that. And Abobasi's been injured. Blanco's still trying to get back to full fitness from the ACL tear. I just thought a lot of their chances were coming from whether it was Diego Chara or Yimi Chara, like, you know, it was the Chara brothers, and they're still in it too. So I'm confident that the one MLS team is going to get it done. Philly showed, hey, we don't have to play the prettiest. And Atlanta had the better of the play in the first half. They weren't clinical and they got absolutely punished. And now it's game over. They're not beating Philly 3-0. They're not getting back into this tie. It's over. But I think Philly has a great shot to win the whole thing. Has a really great shot just based on the bracket.
So before we get there, let's talk Portland, because this was probably the most CCL game of them all. It was off the rails early, and it was a ton of fouls. You could say the ref controlled it by calling them. I don't know if that's true. It didn't feel like there was a ton of control in this game. And I would say for Portland, this was the game I thought they'd play. I think they came out the first 15 minutes and just sat deep. Don't lose the game. Then they started to find their feet offensively. They hit in transition. They hit in the counter. And then the PK gets called against them. The right call. in the 44th minute, 43rd minute, like right before halftime. Bravo, the new left back, for no reason, steps in and stabs. And that was one of the things we've questioned on this show is, can these guys who clearly can attack defend? And this was the worst moment to give up a PK like that.
Well, it's just the decision making.
Yeah.
Whenever you're playing against a Mexican side, you know, around the box, if you touch an attacker, they will go down. That is just that. It's that simple. So you never dive in the box. Just stand up, contain, and force them to the end line, or force
where they're
them
going.
Into a
teammate. By the way,
right?
I can't remember what it was, but I think it was Vinas. I don't know. He was going outside. He's trying to get to the end line to cross, but it wasn't a dangerous moment. He's not going towards goal, and Bravo isn't even paying attention. Just throws his foot in and fouls him. And it was the clearest call. It was probably the clearest call that was made in the entire game. And it's
very clear penalty.
And then credit to Portland. They didn't collapse. Nope. They came out of halftime and they bombed forward. They got numbers into the attack. But as you said, that quality, someone who can tear a team open, literally someone who could do something similar to what Zellerayan did for Columbus, didn't exist on the field for Portland over the course of that game.
That's what they're missing. And you know, the good thing about the MLS teams is in the summer, you can always reinvest in the squad if you can make it to the semifinals. So I look at a club like Philadelphia. They're not losing anyone in the transfer window. Mm. They're not selling anyone. If anything, they're going to bring in another center back, because that is the one soft spot when you look at the Philadelphia Union. Is Andre Blake, keep you in the game, phenomenal. Jack Elliott, Jacob Glasnost, on the other hand, not up to par when you're talking about, you know, down the spine, you know, Bedoya, Jamiro Montero, and now they have, you know, Fontana and Flock, and then Shabioko and Sergio Santos. They're missing a strong, strong partnership, at least, you know, of someone to replace Mark McKenzie and fill those shoes. But, you know, also Columbus, they're not losing anyone. They're only going to get stronger. You get Kevin Molino back.
Yeah.
They just have to get over the hump. And then TFC, you're going to have everyone fit and healthy come summer. And Jefferson Soteldo. You have Jefferson Soteldo to come in as well. Like, this is going to be very interesting if the MLS teams can come together, get those results, and then be that much stronger come the semifinals.
So I think there's a chance Portland could get through on this, right? They're a team that the only person they've quote-unquote lost who will be suspended for the next leg is Zuparic, which, based off last night, I'm not sure is totally lost at this point, because another player who's diving in feels a little bit lost, especially when he has to defend in open space. And I think Portland wants to sit deep and counter. And so this game, going to the Azteca at altitude, but there won't be fans, Club America still has to come and attack you. And so I think this will feel comfortable for Portland, and they have a chance. I think Yimi Chara was awesome in this game, and that fits him perfectly, right? He just wants open space to run into, and he just wants ground to cover, similar to his brother. And so he's ready to go. I think Williamson was a bit of a letdown in this game, because he's a guy who could hit the final pass where you didn't see it last night, and in a group where, as we said, no one exists that's going to create those chances. He could have been that guy, and I didn't see it from him in this CCL game.
Yeah, I'm with you. He didn't look his sharpest. And I think he can be a fantastic player. You know, one of the better MLS midfielders and possibly sold to Europe. But again, I think it's about getting into a rhythm. And Portland just doesn't have it yet, which is also, I think, a great sign, because they're tying Club America 1-1, right, and they're not even close to being at their best.
Yeah.
So it gives them another week to finally try and figure some things out, iron out those kinks, maybe insert a couple players to see, okay, what can we throw at Club America to kind of change it up? Because you can't defend for 90 minutes at Azteca with fans or without fans and think you're going to get a result. You can't do it for 90 minutes. So yeah, there's got to be a good balance.
Let's hit this real quick. PK call. It was the last kick of the game, was the penalty that was finally taken. Do you think it was a penalty?
You tell me.
I was like, did I lose Charlie there?
No.
It's clearly a handball if you're saying that it was the defender's choice to go to ground there. The question is if he got pushed in the back.
Right.
I could go either way there. I think once it was called on the field, it wasn't clear and obvious to call it back because of VAR, which was cleared to be used by CONCACAF like Tuesday morning for this competition. So not exactly working perfectly yet, I don't think, was evident over the course of this week. But I think it's the right call in that moment based off what happened. And listen, East Coast here, late night. I live in a small apartment building with thin walls. I was doing everything I could. I was just, that's the whole time. I'm Micah Richards. Like, but I try not to yell because it was epic. That got me jacked. That whole game had me juiced up, ready to go. That's what I love. We've alluded to the first two games. For Philly, you mentioned struggles a little bit defensively in the first half. Atlanta threw everything at them. Atlanta came with nine players in the attack. George Bello's playing attacking mid. They're throwing Dom forward, everything. Andre Blake had to save them. But in fairness, I think if Sergio Santos had started this game, it would have been 2-0 at halftime because Atlanta couldn't defend that way. And when they didn't create, when they didn't score on those chances, this game was pretty much over.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, when you see Philadelphia and Corey Burke, just he doesn't give you kind of the same type of play that you get when you're looking at Sergio Santos, the runs. He's just much more direct. He's much more clean. Corey Burke is like this big target who throws his body all over the place, strong as can be, but not clean. And I think when you see instead of Sergio Santos in the game, now you get a deep threat because Corey Burke doesn't really give you that. Sergio Santos not only gives you it, but he can finish. And he causes problems with his pace. Yep. And you saw the back heel, which was also fantastic. Like I was like, oh man, he's really starting to develop. You know, he's taking on the responsibility of being like that goal scorer who can do more than just kind of make those runs. Like, can you hold up the ball? Can you open up space for other people? Can you see other runs developing and get that midfielder the ball when they make a late run out of midfield? So I think if those two strikers are firing on all cylinders, Shabelko and Sergio Santos, because usually it's an individual performance from one or the other, right?
Yeah,
it's never both. That second half was both of them. So I'm, I look at Atlanta, I'm like, it looks better to me than it did last year. So I'm like, okay, that you got to take the positives, even though they got absolutely smashed in the end. The scoreline doesn't clearly kind of reflect how the match went, right? Yes, the threads came undone at the end. But I think in the first like 50 minutes, you're like, whoa, okay, Atlanta. Barco looks like the Barco that we all thought when you see his price tag. You're like, oh, this has to be a young phenom from Argentina. He's got to be super skilled. And yes, you see that now. The energy he gets around, you know, in the final third, he's unpredictable, which is what you want from a player like that. So I like what he's done so far with the squad so far. So Heinze, for me, is definitely a plus, and I'm glad that Atlanta's starting to get to where they want.
So my only worry is, just real quick, it looks better from Atlanta, but it also sort of looks like 2 years ago, early De Boer, when it was like they would throw numbers forward because they didn't know where they'd get goals from. And they still have trouble breaking through. And while Barco looks better, Moreno looks a little bit better, Santi Sosa's a player, none of them look goal dangerous. And so it's sort of like we're waiting for Joseph to get healthy again for this team because they literally, as they threw everything
they got chances.
Forward, but no one finished.
Yeah, but they weren't getting chances with De Boer. They had the ball.
Early with De Boer, it was a lot of like, get to the end line, clip it up, no one's there. Okay. Not as clean maybe as the one they had in this game. But again,
No one's finishing. That's different. Like I'd rather get chances and not finish than not even get chances. And you're like, huh, who's going to shoot the ball?
So my only point is there's a lot of players on the field who have no history of being finishers except Joseph. And so it's like, is that going to change? And if hindsight can figure it out, that's, you know, maybe it's these guys are inefficient and you generate 25 chances a game and that's enough to score. It's a worry a little bit to me. Obviously, they've got the return leg next week up in Philly, as you said, 3-0, probably over. Shout out to Casper Shabilgo and Jim Curtin said, I got on him at halftime like I've never gotten on him in our time together. and he responded with two goals and an assist. So a pretty good return from Kasper Schmeichel. And it looks like he, as you said, is ready to fire, with Santos, which is dangerous. And the last one, which we've hit a bunch, so we don't have to get into super in depth, TFC Cruz Azul at Raymond James Stadium. Obviously, Toronto can't be home. TFC dominates possession. I think they won 56-44 against the best team in Mexico, and they just didn't mark set pieces, which is just brutal to experience, as we've seen. That's like normally the one place MLS teams have an advantage, mm-hmm. and they got dominated there, and they lose 3-1. Even 3-2, they may have had a shot going home. As you've said, they're getting healthier. They're getting more cohesive under Armas every game. 3-1 feels like a little bit too far.
Yeah, three away goals to this Cruz Azul team, and you know they're only going to be better at home. It's all but gone. I mean, you can't account for injuries, you can't account for red cards and all those things that can really change a game and give mm-hmm. A team who's down two in a real advantage, but the likelihood of that is slim. So, and you also have to look at kind of who they have, the available players. I mean, you don't have Pozuelo, you don't have Akinola. Josie's just getting back on the field. Osorio just getting back on the field. You don't have the rhythm or the sharpness or the fitness to really to compete with a really strong Cruz Azul side right now.
One thing I'll say for them is I think a lot of MLS teams, they will have lost this game going in. I think this team's going to believe they can win this, which yeah. probably doesn't make sense, but that's a credit to what TFC has built. And I think what Chris Armas has continued so far, going back to the León series, of just that self-belief that they're as good as anyone, which should be interesting. You made a point when we were coming into the show. You're looking at all these teams. You've said it a couple of times, Columbus, Philly, all these teams, if they can get through, Portland should mm-hmm. get better, because the semifinals not till August 12th. We don't know when that Batura even begins for Mexico. It hasn't been announced yet. So this could be a reverse situation where like Mexican teams, Liga MX teams are coming in preseason or early season form, and MLS teams are in their prime. And Cruz Azul, I think, are the favorites right now in the whole tournament. And they've got some young players who they could sell in mm-hmm. this offseason, because it just makes sense for that to happen, where none of these MLS teams you think are, as you said, going to dismantle. So it'll be interesting. Orbelin Pineda, Roberto Alvarado, two of the best attackers on Cruz Azul, young guys. This could be their time to go to Europe or make a move in Mexico potentially. And it could open the door for an MLS team to win this thing. It's going to be pretty cool. The second leg's coming up next week. This tournament always delivers, so you have to tune in. Let's get to pure MLS action this weekend. By the way, that Atlanta Philly game, the second time ever to have an all-American MLS quarterfinal match or later in this tournament. Normally, obviously, Canadian teams get pulled with them. So kind of showing you a little bit of what's been happening.
We're moving on up.
We're still losing, but we're moving on up, yeah. moving on up. And you can catch all those games on FS1 and 2DN as well. And speaking of 2DN, you can catch Houston Dynamo against LAFC 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday on Univision 2DN. And then, of course, on SAP and streaming on Twitter in English. Ramsey Sandoval, friend of the show, will be on that. I think Chris Whittingham as well. They do a great job. They had the San Jose game last week. Charlie, there's two sides to this game. You've got an LAFC team with a bunch of question marks and a Houston team with probably less question marks than coming into the season after 2 weeks, but still some. Anders wants to know, what could you see from Houston in this game that either convinces you in this team for the year or out of this team for the year? What do you want to see from this game? What have you seen from them so far?
That's a loaded question. it's hard for me to look at this Houston team and say this team has a real shot at competing for the playoffs or even, MLS Cup, just because they're not really generating chances. You mm-hmm. have Maxi Arruti, who's, towards the end of his career. And what are you looking to do in the final third? And how are you connecting and combining? And what opportunities are you getting? And you have Fafa Pico on one side, who's just all pace. But as far as like a rhythm and a style of play, you haven't really seen that from the Dynamo. And, Joe Corona is another player in the midfield who gets on the ball, but you're not really seeing like a defined style. And are we going to be a possession team? Are we going to be a team that like is on the front foot, ultra aggressive, high press? You don't know what you're getting from the Houston Dynamo. And I'm sure from them, they're like, we're still trying to figure it out because we have a lot of new players. And, you know, this is our first season with this group, this collective. I struggle when I watch the Houston Dynamo to say, you know, this is a team that has a lot of upside or potential.
It seems like there's a mix for them of pressing, but also having cohesive possession. Like they look clean in possession. It's not super goal dangerous patterns, right? No. But it's everyone seems to know where they're going. The pass is coming pretty quickly. First touches have been clean. It's a midfield three that fits that, right? Of three guys who are clean in possession, but they're not killers in the attack. They're not going to create out of nowhere. And they can press, but they're not the most athletic in the league. And that's kind of where this team fits. And the front three seems to fit pressing pretty well. And as you said, they're not super goal dangerous in possession either. I've been entertained by them. Like the two games they've played have been two of the better soccer games. But you yelled Blake Bodley at me in the meeting when I brought this up about how they played well this week against a less than first Portland team.
Yeah. That Houston team was not really dangerous, right? And you were like, yeah, you should be. I think they played well, and they had an own goal. That was the only goal that they scored, was an own goal. And you're playing against a Portland team that's being rotated, and you're not playing against some star striker in the Western Conference that you'd play against. You're playing against Blake Bodley, and no disrespect to Blake Bodley, but there's no experience there. This isn't a player who's has 25 goals to his name, and you struggled. So, you know, I know you Boniek Garcia is at center back. That's another player who maybe
hasn't been at fault for any of the goals.
Yeah, but as of now, okay. But long term, that's not going to be. You know, the right situation for Houston or Boniek Garcia. I like Tim Parker. I like Zarek Valentin. You know, I like Joe Corona and you know, I like that Fafa Pico can push teams, you know, because if you press really high, Fafa is one player who can really cause problems. But then who do you have around them that can facilitate, who can score goals? You know, you always need a goal scorer, a perennial striker. When you have a Fafa Pico, and you also need a midfielder who can make those runs in the box to get the cutback from Fafa. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to still be done with this Houston Dynamo team.
We do a lot of work on this show to help out Minnesota United. We give them that clipboard, that bulletin board material. I know Zarek Valentin's been watching and pissed off, so you're welcome, Zarek. This was our little gift to you going into a national TV game. Feel free to run these questions as much as you want in the locker room to help the team out for Houston. It does feel like a team that, I said it about Montreal last week, they could know who they are, work hard, and fight, and that gets you points in MLS over the course of the season. Is it enough to get in the playoffs is a question mark because you don't have that high-end killer, that high-end talent. And it'll be interesting to watch because I think that's something we're still learning about this league. We still have a lot of teams kind of sitting in the middle where we know who LAFC is. We know who Seattle is. Fortunately, right now, we know who FC Cincinnati is. In between, there's a lot of question marks of who you can be in MLS. On the flip side for LAFC, real quick, we talked about them. Doesn't seem like Carlos Vela is going to be back this week. It was interesting. Diego Rossi had a fitness test right before the game week one. Did not pass it, but you assume that means he's close and then doesn't dress week two. Probably LAFC being safe, which I think is a good thing based off the injuries last year and the way they kind of pushed Vela and it backfired on them. So that's progress for them as a club.
I mean, no doubt, because they're still getting results and they're missing their two most dynamic, effective players. I like what Bob Riley has done because he's empowered the other players who are behind Diego Rossi, who eventually is going to be sold anyways. So you want whoever is going to step in for him on the squad to have had some experience and to be able to take off once Diego goes. So I really like what he's been able to do without two of your best attacking players. You can't say the same thing for other coaches and players across the league when they lose their two best attacking threats. So with this LAFC side, I think that they're looking to really build character and momentum, because this year they're trying to win a trophy, right? They, you felt like the other times it was really just Carlos Vela and that midfield trio of Latif Blessing, Atuesta, and Marc-Anthony Kay, and Latif Blessing now getting back to that midfield position.
Yeah.
You can see that there's symmetry there. Like, it works. When Latif Blessing was at right back, it did not work. It really put them at a disadvantage. He was out of position often. People were getting, you know, their back line was getting exposed because the center back has to come out to deal with the player that Latif Blessing should have been dealing with. So I think when he's in the midfield trio, now when he buzzes around, he has cover because Atuesta and Marc-Anthony Kay know exactly where he's going to go and what he's going to do. And when they're in possession, he is that player who can find those spots, who can dribble. He's you know, I think he's great when it comes to the transitional part of the game, whether it's in the defensive phase where they get on the ball and he can break the lines and dribble through a couple of players, or if they're in the attacking phase of the game and they lose the ball, he's got that great reaction to win it right back or force a player into the wrong part of the pitch or making a poor decision. So I think this LAFC side finally looks like they're where they're supposed to be.
Coming out of CCL last year, promising to see them continue on that road. This is going to be a fun game to watch. Good soccer between both these teams. That's 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. On Sunday, national TV doubleheader spread out across the day. So you get a little afternoon, a little evening. Gives you a little time in between to do what you need to do. Let's start with my side. Inter Miami against Nashville SC on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. 1 p.m. Eastern time. Then we'll get to your goal scorers, Chicharito in Seattle, and all of that. The Higuain brothers, unfortunately, myself and Matt Doyle, won't be there for that game. Their mother sadly passed away this week, so our thoughts go out to them and their family, and I know everyone at Inter Miami supporting them as best as they can, which is a huge loss. Obviously, they both scored in their last game against Philadelphia, and they have to do what they have to do for family reasons, but for Phil Neville and Miami, now how do they move on for this game? Because I look at it and there's not a whole lot of attacking options on this team outside of those two guys you're losing now that Matias Pellegrini's gone.
Well, I mean, Robbie Robinson, you get your opportunity with Gonzalo gone. You're playing on the wing. Now you can move into a more central position where he was in college and at Clemson. And I thought he was fantastic because, you know, I think for Robbie Robinson, getting into a rhythm and comfort is being central because you're more involved and you can go left or right as opposed to just north, south, and, you know, diagonally to your right. I think he's going to be more influential within the Miami attack because he's a player who can hold up the ball, but he likes to get in behind and make runs. And I think as a central striker in this team, he'll have more chances. And when he gets more chances, he's typically more involved and dangerous. So I think this is that one opportunity for a young player to say, okay, you know, I scored in the first game of the season because, you know, I had a layup from Gonzalo. Second game didn't go so well against Philadelphia. And then we scored, you know, two goals in the second half to beat Philadelphia Union on the road, which is you know, a really difficult thing to do. Now here's my opportunity to
stake claim. That. Right?
Right.
Like he got pulled out at halftime.
Yeah.
Which is the ultimate like confidence breaker. And now he's got his shot, as you said, to like play his position. And he's not going to play well and win the starting center forward role on Gonzalo Higuain's team. But at least you get confidence going back to the wing and maybe winning your starting spots back.
Yes. It's definitely one of those moments where you've been playing. Maybe you feel like you're playing out of position. You get put in your natural position and you feel, okay, now I can show the coach what I can do. Not only coach my teammates.
Right.
Because you've maybe done that in training to warrant you starting in the first place. But now playing in the middle, connecting passes, checking into those spots you normally would, I think this will go well for Robbie Robinson if he can come in with the right mentality.
And it sounds like it's going to be his game. We're hearing Rodolfo Pizarro did not train. This is coming on Thursday. And no Julian Carranza either. So you're missing the Higuain brothers. You're missing your DP number 10. It means the game's probably going to go through his feet, a lot of it, and his ability to link up with Lewis Morgan and be those options, which he got hurt last year, didn't have that opportunity when he probably would have early in the season. So this is a huge shot for that young player, and we hope to see the best from him in this one. Miami, a decent start to the year, and this could be a tough one to continue. Let's hit Nashville real quick because we have Randall Leal, our AT&T 5G call to the field coming up in just a moment, the Tico. So for Nashville, two draws, 2-2-2 games. They were the best defensive team in the league last year, but they've given up four goals. But they also struggled to create goals last year, and they've had some of the highest XG in the league, and they've scored four goals.
Right.
Is this a make or break game for them either way? And are you impressed or not impressed?
It's not a make or break game.
Okay.
But I am a little dumbfounded from Nashville last year, this year, in the sense that this was one of the most defensively sound teams in Major League Soccer. They knew exactly how to get the best out of the group. Defensively, they didn't let anyone break the lines. They were compact. They forced attackers into making poor decisions because they were struggling to get service, because Dax McCarty and Godoy would clamp down and protect the back four. Zimmerman and Rodney had a great partnership. They knew when to step, when to drop. And you felt like, man, you're lucky to score a goal or get a chance on Nashville. Now they want to be so much more expansive in their football because they have Leal, and they don't want to be known as like this, just a defend first team and you know, only score on set pieces through Romney or Zimmerman. They wanted to show, hey, we can play too with Leal and Cadiz is Jonder Cadiz is getting on the end of service. But to the detriment of the team, they got away. What made them so successful last year is because there weren't many openings.
I don't know that I agree with you.
Now they're still giving more chances than they did last year. And now they're not finishing. They're creating chances, which is great. It's not like, oh, they're only scoring on set pieces. They're creating chances. They're just not finishing. I mean, and Cadiz has two goals in the year. He's still second in the league in scoring. It's not like, oh, you know, we have a goose egg. We don't really have anyone who can score. He should have five.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a lot of expectations. I think he maybe outside of Chicharito had the highest XG expected week two. But he scores one goal. So it's like that in-between place. I think the goals they've conceded are fluky. They conceded two to Cincinnati in the first game of the season, the first 15 minutes. One's a penalty. One's a great moment from Lucho. Fair. And then two against the run of play. Wild. Mason Toy screamer. Broguiar dribbling through everyone. You're shaking your head at me. You're not giving me any love on the fluky goals.
No. Fluky. How can you say it's fluky? Like, it was a beautiful curling ball from Mason Toy. It's not a screamer. It's just a Thierry Henry-esque curler outside the box. But it's the play that sets that up, which doesn't make it fluky. You didn't close down a player. You gave too much space. And then the ball is played into Mason Toy's feet for him to just curl it one time. So there's nothing fluky about it. And then the Zachary Broguiar play as well. He gets down the right flank, comes inside, and then just the fluky part is you don't expect them to just rifle it upper 90 near post. But it's the buildup to that. And typically you don't see that from Nashville, where players are able to, you know, get in these 1v1 situations, open up and create these gaps within Nashville's back line, because that didn't exist last year. And now we're starting to see that. So On one end, you're like, wow, Nashville are creating all these chances, and it's different. And it looks like, okay, they're entertaining when you watch them. That there's no doubt. I like watching Nashville play as opposed to last year, where you knew exactly what you're getting and it wasn't so entertaining. But they're opening themselves up. And so I think when they aren't in possession, I think they can do a better job of closing those gaps, consolidating the back line and the midfield, and not allowing players to break them up, get them loose or break them apart.
Well, speaking of entertaining and potentially fluky or non-fluky goals, Randall Leal, goal scorer in game one, shot or cross, we shall ask him now. Our AT&T 5G call to the field from Nashville, Randall Leal. Randall, thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you so much. It's a pleasure for me to be here with you guys.
So we have to start with this. I've heard the rumors through the media, but I need it from your own mouth. Week one, cross or a shot?
No. I try to cross. To be honest,
no!
I try to
respect.
Yeah. Why? With the respect though.
No.
Randall, if you say shot, then you win goal of the year.
Yeah, I know. I like to be honest, you know, because sometimes I think when you want to do something different, you do a beautiful goal, you know, like what I did. So if I say then I want to shoot, and lie. So no.
Randall, this season you look more comfortable, and it seems to me that you're playing with more freedom. What's the difference between last year and this year for you?
I work in it. When I holidays, I spoke with my family and I say to them that I want to be better than last year, you know, because last year I was a new player, you know, and it's not easy to come here from Costa Rica and do what you can do, you know. So I try to work in details and mistakes than I did before. So I try to be sharp also in me, you know, low fat and everything to be ready for this season. And I think I'm doing good, but also I try to be better every day, you know, every training. I try to work hard because I know that I can do better.
So that's on the field. That's football. That's soccer. Off the field, it was a tough 2020 for everyone. I know your family is very important to you. Have you been able to get everyone to Nashville? Is everyone settled? How is life off the field in year two?
I'm a guy that think too much in family, you know. I like to be able for my family when they want to do something. I go out. I meet a lot of people here in Nashville, you know, from Latins guys. So, you know, I like to be at home. I like sometimes I go out with my family to know a little bit of the city. I like too much Nashville. I like, you know, it's a calm, you know, city. Mm-hmm. You can go out. Nobody do something crazy. So it's very good.
From last season, I watched Nashville, and there wasn't much attacking play in the final third. It wasn't different passing patterns, and you weren't opening up teams. It was very straightforward counterattack. Not very entertaining to watch. This year...
Debatable.
Debatable for some, but for me... This year, it seems like there's much more movement, and it's you're able to be more creative, and there's more passing patterns and combinations, and therefore you're getting more chances. What do you see the difference in being as a team when you go forward and creating much more chances this time around?
I think it's because last year all the players are new, you know, and now we have more connections between players. We know more each other. So, and also because the first two games of this season, we was losing 2-0 in the first 15 minutes, you know? And then after, if you are losing 2-0, you have to go to press and go to attack, you know? But I think now the coach is giving us a little bit more freedom to do teams, you know, in attack, to be creative. And this is what we are doing.
Do you have a special connection with one player in particular? Do you look for someone? Like, I always had one connection with the attacking central midfielder. I would say, okay, you know where I go, I know where you go, and I always look for you. Do you have that kind of same player?
If you watch the game, I always have a good connection with Godoy, you know? He always look at me. I know what he want to do, if he want to go long or go short. So I think I play good with him.
Panama and Costa Rica.
Yeah, yeah.
Come together.
Yeah. Ah, but it's just here because I say it in the national team, I have to kill him.
Yeah. We're going to get to the international in a minute. But before, so you mentioned Godoy. We've seen Yonder Cadiz come in, you know, late last year, 2 goals so far. What is he like as a center forward? What can he bring to your game and to this team?
Yeah, a lot. He's a very good player. also before I start the season, he talked with me and he say, "Hey, if you give me assist, I give you money. I give you money." So we try to jog with this team, and you know, it's a little bit you know, to make group, you know, and everything, and we also the coach expect too much of him, you know, because he's very good. Also, he work extra, you know, to be ready for this season, and you can see in the field, you know, when you cross or something, he is always available, you know, because he's the stronger team for him, you know.
So let me ask you, you mentioned you were behind the first two games, 2-0, 2-0. What happened? Is it something that as a team you're worried about the defense, about giving up goals, or is it just, I called it fluky?
No. We don't know what happened, you know. We just, you know, make mistakes, and then, they score, you know. We don't want to start losing 2-0, you know. And this is what we talked this week, to see the mistake that we did in the first 15 minutes and try to do it better against Miami, you know, because we cannot start all the games like this, you know, because it's difficult when you are losing 2-0 and then you have to go and make goals and everything, because the other team don't give you the same chance that you give, you know?
And it's a good thing that you're playing Miami. And I feel like there's a rivalry really starting to bubble up between Nashville and Inter Miami. They don't have the Higuain brothers because they went to go visit their family, and our thoughts and prayers go out to them. But what do you make of their defense, their team? Do you feel like they're going to offer different, you know, problems for you this time around, or are you anticipating them playing a certain style versus you?
No, I think it's going to be a very difficult game, you know, because we won last game, and they went off of the playoff. So I think they want to come here to win, you know. To see then that moment was a mistake for them, or they don't really play well the last game. And this is what we have to team, you know, to be smart, to make a good strategy for them, to respect our home, you know, here.
Well, it doesn't matter what they think. That playoff win, one of the great moments already in Nashville history. We're looking forward to that national TV game at 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, ESPN, ESPN Deportes. But before we let you go, we have to talk Selección. We have to talk Los Ticos. You're part of that group. I wanted to start with Olympic qualifying, and it didn't go the way you wanted. But what was the experience like? What was the feeling in the group for the young Costa Rican players being together for those few weeks?
Yeah, I you know, like a leader for this group, I talked with them, and after we lost against Mexico, because we was out at that moment, and I say to them that this is the reality, you know. In Costa Rica, okay, you can make 2-3 goals, 4 goals, you can play good, but when you go out, it's different, you know. It's other reality. So they need to think more about this, work extra, you know, in Costa Rica, because when we have the moment to play against, you know, international teams, you see the difference, you know, and we have to be ready. At that moment, I think everybody was thinking, okay, we are good, we can, and then this is the reality. We lost the first game, the second game we lost also. So this is more what we have to work, you know, in these kind of teams. Then you make it better. The mistake that you did in Costa Rica, you cannot do it when you play with international teams, you know, because it's different.
You mentioned being a leader, that young group. It's been a long time. Brian Ruiz, Oviedo, Waston, Umana, Keylor Navas.
Borges.
Borges. That's been the group. They're older now. Do you feel this younger group is ready to step in and replace them?
I think they support us a lot to players. Then we already went to the first national team. So this is good, you know. We have the confidence from them, you know, for Navas, Borges, Ruiz. And if we want or not, or if we are ready or not, we need to take this place, you know, because they already gone and they are too old. So the national team need a new generation. So we need to be ready for this moment and you know, play this kind of games. Like now we have the semifinal for National mm-hmm. League against Mexico, and we have the Gold Cup also. So I think for the new players, then we are coming to start the new generation or national team. We have to show to the fans in Costa Rica and also to the coach that we are ready here and we can play, you know.
Well, you touched on it, the Nations League semifinals against Mexico. What does Costa Rica have to do to make sure that they're going to beat Mexico? Where do you need to improve?
I think always we play good. Like last friendly games, we lost 0-1, but we play very good, you know. Sometimes it's just a little bit like a scare, you know, when we are in the, you know, 70, 80 minutes and we are 0-0. And you start thinking, no, we cannot make a mistake because they make us. And then we lost the game at 90 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
So we need to change this mind and be secure, and we can beat them.
One of the giants of the region. It's been awesome to watch. I want to ask you one last question. Keylor Navas, he could win his fourth Champions League, I think, this year. Having that teammate, knowing him, watching him in those big games, what's it like to see his success, to be a friend and a fan at the same time?
He is, I just say that he is a very good guy. And he deserves everything that is happening in his life, you know. When he go to the national team, he's doing the same thing with all the guys, you know. He have no preferred to don't talk with him or no. He's doing the same with everybody. So I hope he can beat Manchester City, you know. I know it's not easy, you know, but I hope it for him, you know. It's for Costa Rica. Imagine if he win the Champions League again. It's gonna be amazing.
Randall, I love to get to learn about different players within the league and some of the struggles that they've overcome. For any player, 2020 was difficult, but especially for a foreigner to come into Major League Soccer during a pandemic, has there been anything in your life that has kind of prepared you for this moment to deal with it, the strength that you showed? Did you have any pieces of adversity that made you that much stronger to handle 2020?
Yeah, because you know what you say. It's not easy for players and first come here, and you see a lot of things happens. Just the virus, and also here in Nashville the tornado, everything. So it's like no. This is what I don't expect here. So you know, but this is just things, and I always think of my family, and this made me strong. You know. I think always on them, and this is what if I have to support everything, I will do it for them. So yeah, for me, okay, not the year that I spent, you know, out of the pitch, because on the field we did great, great. So, but okay, the time changed, and now I hope everything is going right, you know.
Well. You've made your family proud so far. Los Ticos, yes. International, winning in CONCACAF and winning in MLS playoffs already. It was a goal week one. Whether it was a shot or a cross doesn't matter. We hope for more assists to Yonder Cadiz this week. And you could give us some of that money as well. We'll all share. Yeah. We're all in this together now. 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday against Inter Miami on national TV. Big game, rematch of the playoffs from last year, as we said. Randall, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
No, thank you. Thank you, Sue. Thank you to you. It's a pleasure for me to be here. And I hear if I can help you with something, just let me know.
I'll see you on the beach. We'll meet up in Limon down in Mexico, okay. down in Costa Rica.
No, okay. Tamarindo.
Tamarindo.
Yeah. Muchas gracias. Thank you.
No. To you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Surrender Leal, for joining us. Of course, you can watch that game 1 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN or ESPN Deportes on national TV on Sunday. We are very excited for those two sides to get back into it. Andrew's not here, so for his sake, I'm going to say rivalry game because they were both expansion teams at the same time. We love rivalries. We love narratives. Andrew, feel better. That one's for you. 9 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday then. You got a long break and then two games to close out the weekend. First national TV, Seattle Sounders against LA Galaxy, FS1, and Fox Deportes. Anders had this to lead the show, and we've moved it back down. I'm just kidding. Anders, very professional in what he does. But this is why he wanted to lead it. Nico Lodero, the god of Seattle, may be back. We think he'll be available for this game. There's a chance he starts. He traveled to LA last week, which Brian Schmetzer said he would only do if he looked good in training. Didn't play because they didn't want to risk him. It feels like on that timeline, now he's available in this game. Whether it's from the start or not, going forward, do you think he fits back into this team in the same formation that they've been playing? This 3-5-2, or do you think they have to shift things around to get Nico Lodero on the side?
Lodero's playing, so he can play in any formation, which is also what makes him so fantastic and I think cutting edge when it comes to midfielders in Major League Soccer. What I would like to see happen within the Seattle Sounders team is Atencio being moved over to where Christian Roldan is right now. Still in the midfield, you put him right smack dab in the middle of that team, and you take Alex Roldan off, and you move Christian Roldan to that right wing back spot, because in that right wing back spot, you can come inside to help the midfield, which is what you're expected, but you can also get down the right flank, and Christian can do that better than most, which still I think allows them to be at full strength, because you're adding Lodero to the side. You keep Atencio because he's such a talented young player. I think to get the most out of him, you keep giving him opportunities to play. And especially with this model in Major League Soccer, you develop talent, you sell talent. It's a selling league. When you have a player who has really kind of, I think, turned everyone's heads across Major League Soccer with his performance and his maturity at such a young age, you know that this kid has something. I watch him play. I'm like, this kid has something. Just the way he moves and how confident he is on the ball, and he finds the right spots. Put him next to Lodero. Let him learn. You're playing against, maybe there's a relationship there that you see develop as well. So you're continuing to allow him to develop into being one of the top midfielders in the league if you can play along Lodero and have success. Along with keeping Roldan in the side, because Christian Roldan has to be there. And I think you're really setting him up to continue to be a player that grows and shows that he's ready for the next step. And that's when you sell him. So I think for Seattle, this is the first time that they have a young player that they've brought up who looks ready now, and you don't want to take off because he's done so well. You don't want to halt that progress that he's made at such a young age.
And it feels like, one, this is the progression for Seattle, right? They are, you want to use the dynasty word or not, they are one of the best teams consistently every year. They've won MLS Cups. They've won trophies. What's next is, how do you make it sustainable? How do you sell? How do you bring young players through? It doesn't seem to be Brian Schmetzer's focus with this group. And this kind of happened by accident, where they had injuries. They haven't been able to bring players in. And he was sort of forced into playing Atencio. And when he's played well now, this is a chance to keep him in the team, which we know Schmetzer likes consistency and likes to continue to give players opportunities when they played well, similar to Alex Roldan, which is the question mark about pulling him off the field. What about pulling a forward off and playing, whether it's a 4-5-4-1 or Lodero or Christian,
definitely
that second
could do
forward?
That. Well, you definitely could do that. You pull Will Bruin off, and then you can bring him on. If there is fatigue, if you're down a goal, otherwise, that's a great option to have on the bench. You keep Rui Diaz as the lone nine because he can play the lone nine, and you stack up the midfield. So now you're a team that's going to keep possession when you have all those midfielders. And Rui Diaz, he's also a striker who can play in any formation. Because
he'll just score goals.
He scores goals, but he can also be involved in the buildup. So if he drops into the midfield to get on the ball, he can open up space for another midfielder to take that space that's been vacated. So I love the fact that you have options. The Seattle Sounders team is talented. I think when you spank Minnesota 4-0 to start the year, it kind of gives you these high expectations. And I think that's what the Seattle Sounders want. They want to be considered the best. They want to have these high expectations to push them. They don't want to settle. And that's why this franchise and organization has been, you know, arguably the best for so long.
And I think there's trust in the locker room of you're going to get opportunities when you deserve it. And whatever is happening is going to lead to the success of this team. And so there's less of the, you can't pull me out. I have to start all those things. And obviously Lodero will start when healthy, but in talking about these other guys like Bruin and Alex Roldan and all them and their opportunities. So Seattle's going to face off against the LA Galaxy, which Chicharito's leading the show. He's been awesome. He is breaking records basically for goal scoring to start the year. And the Galaxy just made another signing to try and secure things a little bit behind them. So before we hit Chicharito, Sega Koulibaly comes in, 24-year-old from Nancy. Did I say that well, Charlie?
Nancy.
So I didn't say that. Nancy. Well. That was a really polite way for you to just correct me and move forward. Out of Ligue 2, which is the second division in France, 24 years old. This is the second French signing that's come in now in short time. Obviously, Kevin Cabral, the DP, still waiting to come through. So this feels like now a connection for the Galaxy to try and sort of mine that French second division, the lower end of Ligue 1, which I think makes a ton of sense. Because if you want to be a selling league, as you said, which MLS is, or MLS should be, this is where there's a ton of talent that you could get at low numbers and produce them and sell them up to huge Bundesliga sides, Serie A, all these teams.
It's a really undervalued league. And so you have a number of super talented young Frenchmen who, you know, have gone through some of the best academies in the world. And they're playing at their League Two team, and you know they're trying to go up the ranks. And sometimes there's a youth national team player, or maybe there's a veteran who's come down from Liga and has been there for an extended amount of time. They're not getting the opportunity, or they need just a change of scenery. Best place to go and purge, you know, a league is Ligue Two, because you have so many quality players that just need an opportunity, and they're young, so that you could sell them right back to Europe or to France or to a Ligue 1 club. So I think Greg Vanney's experience playing in France has allowed him to have those connections, but also to value those young, talented Ligue 2 players, because there's a number of them that you see all across the globe, you know, whether they're at the PSG Academy or Rennes Academy, that have, you know, kind of slipped through the cracks. They get an opportunity to play elsewhere, and then they take off. So I like what Greg Vanney has done to go back to France to find these players who have a first-class education in technique and in tactics and just need an opportunity to play.
And Sega Koulibaly was in the Rennes Academy, as you said, one of the top ones in France. Not all these players are going to be finished products when they get here, but where you're sitting as a league, you have to take the good with the bad and hope that there's opportunities there for these players to play. Four goals conceded, I think, in the first two games and for this Galaxy team. So this is another center back coming in. They brought in Derek Williams from Blackburn, who hasn't been healthy yet and hasn't played, hasn't dressed over the course of this season. So it's still been Steris and Depew. I don't know why I can't say the one name I know. At center back, Julian Araujo suspended the first game. It hasn't been first choice for the Galaxy. Are you worried about this back line? What do you want to see from them?
Yeah, I mean, that's why they just made this signing. So I think Nick Depew has been really surprised. I thought he's done really well. You know, this is a converted center back from striker, right? So I what I've seen from him is the growth of the position. I think his timing of his tackles, his challenges. I think if you put someone who's really experienced next to him and understands the position well and has the legs to cover, provide cover, you're really setting him up to do well. I think Viafania has looked good. I do like what I've seen from him. He plays the left back position. He's consistent. You know exactly what you're going to get. Araujo is another player who I think we all know has a high ceiling, gets up and down. You're starting to see him connect more passes in the final third, be a little bit more comfortable in the final third and not rushed. So defensively is really the only question marks I have for this Galaxy side. I think attacking, when you have Victor Vasquez, you see how he moves on the ball. He's one of those players who can probably play till he's 42, 45 because he doesn't rely on athleticism. So as long as he's healthy.
We have a good question in the mailbag about that.
His first touch is fantastic. If you surround him with players who can cover all the ground, you don't need him to be this, you know, midfielder, two-way midfielder who's going to work just as hard defensively and cover so much ground and be so physical. Because when you're in possession, when you have Jonathan Dos Santos, and I think you can, you know, have rotating with Saldana, Sasha Kljestan, you know, you're bringing in some other players who can help carry the load because it's going to be a lot this year. This Galaxy team will threaten.
Yeah, it's been exciting to watch. We'll see how the defense comes together. This should be an awesome matchup. You've got Chicharito flying high. You've had some success in the attack. You've got a Galaxy team growing with confidence. This is the first big test, right? This is the MLS Cup finalists from last year rather than two teams in Inter Miami and Red Bulls that are still trying to find their feet. So that should be a huge one. Let's hit our ESPN Plus games of the week. Starting off, I'm going to start off. And I'm going to go with the team I don't know that you watch that often, a little unknown team out in Foxborough named the New England Revolution. They're playing against Atlanta United at 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus. Every non-national TV game is on ESPN Plus. You got to get all the screens going. There's a lot going on this weekend. It's going to be awesome. But I look at a Revs team that started a little bit slow this year. They still have got 4 points, which shows you how good they are. But you look at a Chicago game where they start slow, then Tejan finds his feet on the right wing, they create chances. A DC game where I think it's tough to play DC right now because you don't know who they are, and they don't really care about playing on the, you know, with the ball on the ground. They're just out there running and covering ground. But New England still gets a 1-0 win. This is a Atlanta team now coming in who's going to open up and play a little bit. Where are the openings for Hill and Buxa and Bo to find their feet and start to get that attack churning the way we thought they could? So that's my ESPN Plus game of the week. You're not allowed to talk about the Revs. I'm the Revs guy on this show. Charlie, what do you got?
Yeah. Minnesota, Austin. That's my game of the week. And you chose a great game, by the way. I think that's going to be Revs, Atlanta. That's definitely something I'm looking forward to. But Minnesota, Austin. Minnesota, two L's to start the year. All the expectations, all the talent in Major League Soccer. This team, I thought, okay, they're going to be from the very beginning, from the jump of the 2021 season, they're going to be consistent. They're going to challenge and show everybody, hey, we're coming for trophies this year. That has not been the case, and it's not because of talent. So I'll leave it at that. So this is a huge game for them because you can't lose to Austin at home. That would be, you know, to start three with three L's, it's that, that's not good. So I'll leave it at that. For Austin, you win on the road at Colorado. You started the season at LAFC, as difficult as it comes in this league. And then you play at Colorado and you win 3-1. So you get Cecilio Dominguez, your DP, scoring. Now you're playing against Minnesota on the road. This is another tough test. But if you can get a result here, There's a whole lot of optimism for this Austin team. So I'm excited for this one.
So that's a huge one Saturday night for Austin FC. Tomas Pochettino, who we haven't spoken much about, didn't play in the last game. A little bit unsure why, but it sounds like he will be available for this next game and going forward, which is great news for the Verde, all their fans, and all their front office and players and all of that. Moving through a little half MLS news. It's a daily occurrence we need to do. This is the Daryl DK podcast. Now we will discuss Daryl DK. So a whole new thing going on. He's gone to England. He's clinched a playoff spot for Barnsley out of nowhere. He's got transfer rumors coming left and right. And now Julia Poe, who does an awesome job reporting out of Orlando, finally brings the latest news, which is, and we kind of always knew this was possible, but it's now crystallized, is Daryl Dike's loan is till May 31st. The English Championship playoffs to be promoted to the Premier League, which, as I said, Barnsley's already qualified, starts on May 17th. The end of the regular season is May 8th. Orlando has a clause where they can recall him as of May 3rd. And right now, there's basically a huge question mark of what could happen and how it could go down. So I want to take this quote here from Alex Leto, who helps run Orlando City, and says, "We're trying to reach an agreement. If they reach an agreement that we can get something that helps, it makes sense for us to keep Daryl there for another month. That'll be fine. If they do not reach an agreement because Barnsley don't believe that he's worth it, then no problem. We're going to call the player back and he's going to help us here in Orlando." And Charlie, basically what's happened is it was a free loan. There was no fee going the either way, because Orlando was just trying to get him more minutes, more experience, and Barnsley was a good place to do it. Now you're an Orlando City team who's looking at a player who could be playing for you, is playing for another team for free, or you could sell him for big money and is at injury risk. So for Orlando City, what do you do in this situation?
Well, they're in the driver's seat. They hold all the cards. You sent a young striker who had a promising season last year out on loan so he can continue that development. He's not sitting at home. He's not even – if anyone was just working out individually, you're not in the flow of things. You're not in a rhythm. Here, he goes out to the English Championship, continues to progress, scores goals left and right, 9 goals in 17 league matches in the championship. All these clubs are starting to see Daryl Dike, what he can do, and he's scoring in a variety of different ways, which I love to see from him, and his runs, intelligent runs, his hold-up play, being able to combine. I think his feet have improved, his first touch. So for Orlando City, it's sure, you can stay a month longer, but Barnsley, you know how valuable he is to you. You're not going to get promoted, which is the goal. You need him. So pay up if he's that important to you, which is a clear sign in the article, which is you pay us a good amount of money. Otherwise, he comes back to us and it's no problem for us. He did what he was supposed to do. His market value shot through the roof. So we don't need him to finish out the championship playoff series. He can come home and we're good. From Barnsley's perspective, it's whether we have Daryl Dike after the playoffs or we don't, we need him to qualify. There's no point in trying to get to the English Premier League without Daryl Dike. So what is that number? What is that magic number that we can pay you, which will allow you to stay, will allow us to keep him for another month? And I think if I was Daryl Dike, if I was in his shoes, I want to finish out. I want to play. I want to play in that playoffs. I want to play in that home and away leg series. I want that experience. But I want that on my record, on my resume, to say, I went on loan to Barnsley and I helped get them promoted, to have that experience of what that feels like when you're playing for everything, when everyone who supports Barnsley is behind you and is in this for the ride. I think it's just going to be an incredible atmosphere, environment for Daryl Dike to be in, and you want that pressure. That's going to allow you to develop into that much, more of a capable striker to play under that pressure when you're playing for a World Cup in qualifying, when you're playing for, these matches in group stages. Fantastic. I'm super pumped, and I want to see Daryl Dike succeed.
And a reminder on that pressure is he hasn't played in front of fans yet. Fans are slated to come back May 17th in England, which would be the date of that first playoff two-leg affair. Then you try and get basically to Wembley for that final. On what you talked about with Daryl, Leto said, Daryl's a professional in talking about this. He likes the club that gave him his first professional opportunity and developed him and gave him this opportunity to be there. I think he accomplished much more than what we thought would be possible, but it's absolutely in line with his talent and his work ethic and his hard work. I don't believe there'll be any problem with that. That's on if they recall him. Fans were asking, well, will he be upset? How will he handle it? And as you said, I think he wants to stay and be a part of this, but Leto's saying, we believe in his potential. We understand that players, especially in that age, have this desire to go to Europe and play for top tier leagues. I think Daryl has that opportunity. He proved himself to have the opportunity and will help him accomplish his potential and his desire, because I don't think Orlando's calling him back and saying, you're an Orlando City player for the rest of the year.
No.
They're calling him back and saying, we're not going to risk you for a month for free when we know you are worth X dollars and we know that the offers are already coming in. Because while it's a great experience for him, I don't think the offers change because he plays in the promotion playoffs. Everyone knows what he can do over the course of these games. If you're Everton,
it could change. It could change for the better, though. It could only go higher from here.
True.
So
true.
If he all of a sudden puts Barnsley on his back and scores, you know, five goals over, you know, two matches or three matches, he's only going to, that value is only going up 25, 30 million as a striker, as opposed to, you know, where it is now, anywhere from 10 million to 20 million. So I think for Daryl Dike, if you do get recalled,
yeah,
it's disappointing. You would have liked to finish out the season with Barnsley. You feel you probably made those connections, those relationships with the team. You know, you feel really a part of it. You want to finish it out. You want to help them. But at the end of the day, you're like, okay, this is a profession. This is a business. I'm going to come back, do my job, knowing full well that come July, August, you're going to be on everybody's list for a possible transfer over to Europe.
And if you go listen to Club and Country, which is our special international show, Charlie Davies could tell you what he might be doing in May and June for the U.S. national team, because he may not be back very long with Orlando as Nations League's already starting up, the friendly in Switzerland. And Charlie gave us his top five center forwards in order, and spoiler, Daryl's pretty high. Real quick, let's hit some MLS fantasy plays before we go on. His teammate, Mauricio Pereira, is my MLS fantasy play. Suspended the first two games, one of the best chance creators in MLS. He gets back on the field, ready to go against who? FC Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. He has to feast this week, so that's my go-to fantasy play. Don't forget to join the ETR League. Get in there. I had a terrible week last week. Strong week, first one. So I'm looking to bounce back. You can come in and challenge me. Come in and challenge Charlie and Andrew and everyone else.
Yeah, I've had, Charlie. I had a rough go the first 2 weeks. Rough go. Played Carlos Vela. I don't know why. Nice. I thought he was, I did that too. Was going to happen. Yeah, it didn't work out.
I captained him.
Yeah. I'm going Robert Berich, the Chicago Fire. He's clinical. He's you know, direct. They're playing against Red Bulls. They haven't had the best start to the year. I just feel like this is a good time for Robert Berich to score some goals. I feel like a good brace coming from Robert Berich.
Yeah. Hit the post.
That's my guy. Fantasy.
Hit the post in the last game against Atlanta. He's ready to roll. Speaking of Red Bull, let's head to the mailbag. Most of our tweets and emails just said Jesse Marsh in all caps. So we don't even have questions. We just have a topic. Announced just a few hours ago that Jesse Marsh will take over as the next manager of RB Leipzig, replacing Julian Nagelsmann, who's headed to Bayern Munich. And it's a huge moment, I think, in U.S. soccer history. It's obviously a huge moment for Jesse Marsh. Charlie, how much does this mean? How big is this? As I think everyone in your household super excited about this.
Yeah, my boys right now are just going nuts.
Jesse Marsh.
Yeah.
That he takes over last year's Champions League semifinalist, what looks like will be the second place team in Germany this year as an American, as the head manager.
It's incredible to see his rise, right? 2018. We'll go back to the start. Montreal Impact.
Yeah.
Doesn't survive there. Gets a shot with Red Bulls in New York. Wins Supporter Shield. Heads off to be the assistant manager at RB Leipzig. So you've already been in that environment. You know the system. And you've developed relationships. Then you leave after 6 months to take over as the manager at Red Bull Salzburg. And you've done nothing but like incredible results, the style of play. We've all seen the pump-up talk in the locker room playing against the Liverpool. And he's garnered so much respect from managers across the world because of his philosophy, the way he carries himself. He's a very sharp individual, you know, graduating from Princeton. He's a student of the game. He falls under the Bob Bradley tree, right? And they live, breathe, eat, sleep the sport.
Football.
They're dialed in. They're watching football constantly. They want to be the best coach that they can possibly be, and that means you're paying attention to different systems, different styles, different players. And so I think it makes perfect sense for him to go to RB Leipzig. It's you're a Champions League club. You're second in the Bundesliga. Really, the only club that is better than you is Bayern Munich, and that's who you're striving to beat. And you compete against them, which is going to be an incredible environment for Jesse Marsh. And you have Tyler Adams, who you groomed, which is also like pumps me up, as it should pump all the Americans up. Because now you have Tyler Adams, who you know very well. You can manage his minutes if he ever, you know, because Tyler loves to get up and down on the pitch and he logs in all these miles, right? But I think Tyler has been used out of position quite a bit with Nagelsmann, playing him on the right, playing him as a wing back, right midfielder. And I think with Jesse Marsh, he'll bring him back to his preferred central midfield position, being more defensive minded, who maybe box to box is Nate. But I think we're going to see Tyler Adams evolve and take another step forward in his career as well. So I'm super excited for this. I think Jesse Marsh is ready for the opportunity. It didn't come too soon. It's not too big of a move. I think it's the right next step. And he's in the same system. So he's going to have the support. He's going to have the financial support to also go and sign players that he needs. He'll probably bring some Salzburg players, whether it's now or later down the line. He's also had Brendan Aaronson. Possibly see that in the future. I'm super excited because he has earned it. And I think it's the right move for him at the right time. And so we get to see what he can do in Champions League again next year with a more talented, stronger squad.
You talked about his experience in the system. You know, Red Bull is a group that promotes players through their ranks, and they do the same with coaches. He's not the first coach to come through Salzburg and Liefering and come to Leipzig, and you see them littered now all over the football landscape. And we heard the rumor is that he turned down a Tottenham job, as Nagelsmann did, to take this, which means he's already in conversations in the Premier League, and he hasn't even coached at Leipzig yet. And as you said, he's been there. The players know him. A ton of the players have come from Salzburg. Schobelzeit, sounds like Patson Daka coming as well. Maybe a Brendan Aaronson, Haidara, all these guys, they know him from both places. So there'll be a ton of familiarity, a ton of respect. He can hopefully push this team a little bit further. They were close this year to chasing Bayern and just didn't have enough to get over the line. It feels like maybe could be even better next year. And obviously the money they'll get for Nagelsmann helps. And I think also personally, for me as a U.S. soccer fan and someone who watches all of this, I think it's also a cool nod to Bob Bradley, right? Bob, as you said, eats, breathes the game, and he pushed the ability for American coaches with his trip to Europe and the stops he made in Egypt and then in Scandinavia, France, and then Swansea. It didn't work out perfectly for him. And so I think it's fitting and cool that Jesse Marsh, who is his acolyte and cares so much about Bob Bradley and what he's done for the game, is sort of carrying that flag forward, and he's going to carry it into the Champions League and hopefully into a Bundesliga title and even further. And I think at this point, we've reached a spot where now Americans are going to get opportunities. Bob was unique, and I think Jesse is unique because of the Red Bull connection.
Right.
But now it feels like the floodgates have opened and other guys are going to get that chance. And I think it's fitting that Bob and his coaching tree is the one that's kind of led to this.
Well, you also have to think about, you know, some of the Red Bulls players now. You know, what other Americans in Major League Soccer are ready for that jump? Mm-hmm. You know, and he's dialed into that. So I'm all, you know, there's so many positives to Jesse Marsh getting this opportunity, changing the narrative amongst American coaches that they can go to Europe and have success. So it's just a fantastic move. He deserves all the credit in the world, and I'm excited for what next season has to offer.
And hopefully, as you said, Brendan Aaronson following along as well. We've heard rumors around Caden Clark. Tyler Adams, of course, has done his thing there, and it's been awesome to watch and impressive to watch. Charlie, let's close out real quick on a mailbag question from Jared in Milwaukee, who says, are we seeing an extended shelf life for aging playmakers with the new five-sub rule? Victor Vasquez, Higuain, Sasha have all had impact so far this season, despite not playing the full 90. Perhaps coaches are now confident enough to pre-plan subs 50 to 60 minutes in because of this additional spot. Do you see that?
You know how I cannot stand for these pre-planned subs. What are these pre-planned subs? I mean, you have players.
Rub some dirt in it.
You can't predict a match how it's going to go. You know, you can't. Maybe you need some of these players to play the whole time, right? You need them to play 90 minutes because that's what the game offers. Maybe it's a slow paced game. You can't sub off a player that, you know, it suits the style of play suits just because you pre-planned it. You know, you can't account for different injuries across different players, or maybe it's another player who's having a bad performance. You need to make that substitution. So I always hate the mentality of let's play this guy, but he can only give us 60 minutes. What if he's having an amazing game? You still going to sub him off at 60 minutes? You know, like I always think of these strikers or, you know, attacking midfielders, and they say, you know what? He can only have 70 minutes. And I've seen this with like an Elsinho. Elsinho has maybe a brace and two assists or whatever it is, and he's playing incredible, and you're going to sub him off just because that's what the plan was. That I've never seen it work well, unless you have a player who you're trying to get back and you're like, this is what our medical team told us. He can't play more than 60 minutes or 65 minutes, whatever it is. And in order to maintain his health and consider and to make sure that he's going to be a part of the team for the foreseeable future, then you make the sub. Otherwise, unless it's not a health reason, don't give me that 50, 60 minute, 70 minute, we're going to make the change with him and pre-plan it. That's not coaching. That's not managing.
Jim Curtin could win a treble this year, and Charlie still wouldn't forgive him for his treatment of Elsinho. Free the man. Free Elsinho and let him ride. It's going to be an unbelievable weekend. They've got NYCFC on ESPN+. You've got our games you have to watch. You've got three national TV games, and especially Nashville versus Inter Miami, 1 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN on Sunday. Thanks to Randall Leal again for joining us, and everyone in Nashville for making that happen. What a legend. So you should throw him in your fantasy team as well. And we'll be back on Monday with like 80 other people yelling from left and right. But this has been your dream ETR episode, the two-man combo, Charlie Davis, David Goss.
Everybody. Honors. I want you to tweet how good of an episode this was and that you want this back, okay?
The best part about this is we know they'll not listen to this show, so we can say whatever we want here. And with that, thank you to Continental Tire for sponsoring us, and thank you to everyone for listening, and have a good one.